podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
It is the Anfield Wrap. I'm joined by Siobhan Began from Anand's living room, Gareth Roberts from his back bedroom, and Adam Smith from another dimension. I'm Neil Atkinson, and we're going to have a chat about Liverpool's performance and result against Aston Villa. We'll have a chat about Thiago Alcantara as well, and we'll look forward to Liverpool going to Brighton. Unbelievably annoyingly on a July evening, and none of us can go down and enjoy Brighton in that situation. You know, it feels as though it's going to get us one way or another every single time. This year they've come up with a pandemic to stop us. That's the way in which it's worked. But anyway, we'll get on to that and my general regret around the issue to come. But we'll start off talking about Liverpool versus Brighton. And Gareth, I'll start with you, really. I wanted to see him make a couple of changes. They weren't necessarily the changes I wanted to see him make, and I think I've got one in particular there I would like to have seen be a little bit different. But it was startling, really, how disjointed Liverpool looked. It's worth saying, we're watching the Champions, they get clapped onto the pitch. It's remarkable stuff, and you expect them to be. The standards you hold them to are remarkably high. But they did look really rather disjointed for 60 minutes.
He did, yeah. I think there are a number of factors that feed into that. So, you know, I wasn't surprised to see Jürgen mention the conditions. I was mentioning it while I was watching it, because in Liverpool yesterday, it was, to say the least, squally. It was like 50 mile an hour winds in the morning. I think they'd eased off a little bit in the afternoon, but there was rain, there was sun. It was proper four seasons in one day type of stuff. So I thought, you know, we know in the past that Jürgen said, listen, that's a bit mad for footy. So I expected him to say it, and he did say it. And yeah, I think that played a part. But I think when I seen the team as well, I was a bit, I thought this might be a bit of a grind. It felt like a bit of a change too many for me. And, you know, it was tough watching Origi and Oxlade-Chamberlain, to be honest, yesterday. I thought Origi in particular is toiling. And obviously it sparked the conversation once again about the drop-off from the front three to anything below that, really. And at the same time, obviously, you've got Brewster doing pretty well in the Championship, so that's coming back into the conversation again as well. On that quickly, like I would say that, you know, I would always be keeping him around, but I would like to see someone else come in as well. I know that sounds a little bit greedy, and Origi might not be up for that, but equally might be up for that. And I still think there's value to him, you know, being in and around the squad and being able to use him. But when you see him start, I think, you know, the drop-off is huge from what you see when you've got Firmino up there.
Before I bring Adam and Siobhan in on it, Gareth, I just want to come back to you on that, because I think Origi will go somewhere if he moves this summer, and I think he'll go somewhere and I think he'll score 15 goals, for instance, because I think he's a good player. My concern is, it isn't just the drop-off in that he is less good than the other three. It's that he's also really quite a different type of footballer to the other three as well. So it's not just downwards like a step down. It's actually down on a diagonal. And, you know, for want of a better sort of piece of visualization of it, in terms of what I mean, he's a different player. And I don't think it matters. The one he hasn't come in for, actually, interestingly, is Salah, really, at any point. And Salah, ironically, might actually be the one he could be closest to. He's a penalty box striker, comes from wide areas, comes inside, etc., etc. He always ends up pulling left or coming through the middle. Mm. And he really isn't the footballer that Mane or Firmino are. And obviously, he's nowhere near as good as Salah.
Yeah, and I think I kind of feel sorry for him in a way, in like almost what you expect. For those reasons that you've said, he hasn't got the understanding with the other players that the three of them have got together, because they played so much football together. You know, that matters hugely as well. And you just think in general, like, people don't know what they're doing with him, and he doesn't know what they're doing with them. And, you know, it's only 13 starts this season, 26 appearances as sub. And, you know, people will look at that goal record this year. I think it's 5 and 3, only 3 in the league, and say, well, is that good enough? But equally, the front three are just playing everything. And they have done for like a couple of seasons now. They play every game. They're remarkably fit, remarkably resilient. Very rarely do any of them drop significantly in form for a long time. There's been bits. But, you know, so it's really hard for him to get in there, get rhythm, as Klopp always talks about, and show us what he's about. I mean, I always sort of have an argument almost with myself when I watch him. And I was doing that a bit yesterday when I was like, shit, this is a tough watch. And then I was thinking, Remember though when he was boss and like scored against Dortmund and was keeping Sturridge out the side and things like that. And remember how much Klopp loved him when he first came to Liverpool. And you know he put a bit of beef on, he put a few pounds on, he put some muscle on, and everyone was like, "Oh God!" And you know there've been times during his Liverpool career where he has been good. I don't think we should completely change the story around him. And obviously he's been a brilliant substitute, and he scored 5 goals against Everton, which you know. For that alone will always go down well in my mind. But, you know, there's definitely a conversation about him now. We know that we wanted Werner and we know that we backed out of it. So therefore, you know, what is happening about that slot really? Because, you know, Liverpool have been brilliant at maintaining standards in recent times, and we've all loved it. And that standard needs to continue to be maintained despite it becoming increasingly hilarious what Man City are doing. You know, and how many times they've been defeated this season and how poor they are away from home, etc., etc.
Yeah, we'll come on to that in a minute, especially Ian Ladyman's headline, which Robbo enjoyed immensely, it's fair to say. Adam, we'll start with Divock and then move on to Oxlade-Chamberlain with you. Divock finds himself, I think it is difficult for him to get any rhythm, and I think that always needs to be put in your back pocket. But what he doesn't do, though, is he doesn't make it. You know, no one has watched that game against Aston Villa and thought, well, the manager's got to start him against Brighton. Quite the opposite, I think it's fair to say. And there's a little question there as well in that, in the absence of Firmino, you know, very rarely do I, you know, the manager always has his rationale for doing everything, and he knows much more about football than I do. But I would have liked to have seen Minamino rather than Firmino. If you're not going to start Firmino, I would like to have seen Minamino there, because I don't really think we learned anything new about Divock, to be quite honest with you.
I think that's totally fair, and I must admit I was surprised that he dropped Firmino and didn't play, you know, and the only thing I can think of is that he's kind of asking a question of Divock and saying, look, you're sort of playing for your future here, so what, you know, what have you got for us? And the answer was not very much. And I think it's totally fair to point to the lack of rhythm. But I also think, you know, I think a lot of people will have seen doing the rounds on Twitter, the Michael Owen analysis of Firmino and what Firmino adds to the side. And Divock isn't doing that if he gets 50 games in a row, because that's not his, he doesn't do what Firmino does. He doesn't offer it. It's not his game. And that's fine. And I agree completely with what Gareth said about that. There's definitely been times during his Liverpool career when he in a brilliant, but obviously the main one of that really was 15-16, and we were a totally different side, just a completely different side to what we are now. And he would be a brilliant striker, I think, for somebody like Brighton or maybe even Villa, you know, somebody who they need that kind of focal point, and he's the man through the middle, and he's going to hold the ball up and all of those sorts of things. But he's just...
I think, Adam, I'll come back to you on that quickly. I think there's an argument to be made that if Divock Origi starts for Aston Villa yesterday, they might have gone 1-0 up by the hour mark.
Yeah, I think that's right, yeah. And it's not... There's a difference between saying he's a rubbish player and he doesn't work for Liverpool. And I think he fits into the latter category. I think he's obviously a good player. He's, you know, some of the goals that he scored, it's not just been tap-ins. You know, some of them have been really, really good goals. That was it 5-2 against Everton, where, you know, he scores, I think, two of them were absolutely brilliant goals that he scored. So it's not that anyone's saying he's rubbish, blah blah blah, but he's almost yesterday's man, and I just don't see where he fits in this Liverpool team unless we completely change the way that we're playing. And we're not going to do that. You know, we'll make adjustments and changes and tweaks, but we're not going to change everything. And I don't know anymore why he's the club. I think I said last summer we should have sold him when his stock couldn't have been higher. You know, scored the winning goal, or, you know, the final, if you like, in the Champions League final. And let's not forget, by the way, he was rubbish in that game. I mean, rubbish in it, apart from putting the ball in the back of the net. I mean, it was unbelievable. I don't think he made one pass, but he sticks the ball in the back of the net. So I understand cult status and all, because he scored some big, important goals. But when all said and done, we're past that. You know, we're a bigger and better club than just, oh, this player's scored some important goals, so he deserves to be here. I think we're just beyond what Divock can offer us now. And there's no harm in saying, listen, you've been brilliant, thanks very much, but let you go. Because I think he'd prefer to be, as you say, you know, if he'd have been the main man for Aston Villa, I think he'd prefer that, rather than playing fiddle to a load of lads. And then when he comes in, he doesn't do very well because we play a style of football that suits him.
Siobhan, to move this then on to Oxlade-Chamberlain, three players come in. Keith is the third. We'll come to him in a second. Oxlade-Chamberlain, just for me, never really settled in the match. And when Gareth said before, when he saw the midfield, he thought, oh, this could become a bit of a slog. There's a little bit of a thing there where, theoretically, at least, Keita and Oxlade-Chamberlain are the two most attacking of Liverpool's central midfielders. So you would have thought the opposite, but I knew exactly what Gareth means when he's looked at that and thought, yeah, this is the way this could go. And he never quite, to me, almost seemed to settle in the game, Oxlade-Chamberlain. It never seemed clear which side of the midfield two he was playing and what he was doing and what his roles and responsibilities were. And that's, I think, his performance, not what the manager's done.
Yeah, there was a lot of kind of, there was no, he didn't seem to know what he was there for, what his role was for. There was tons of energy, tons of endeavour, as usual, all you know, all the effort and all the enthusiasm, but every touch was heavy. He was never quite in the right place kind of thing. He definitely toiled, and his energy, the one thing that was going for him in the first half, completely dropped off in the second half. And yeah, it was, you weren't sorry to see him come off, put it that way, were you? But that's not to say I don't think he'll get there, because I genuinely think he will in the right game, but it absolutely wasn't the game for him, I don't think.
He was the one, to me, Siobhan, who to me most looked like he could have done with Henderson playing. And there's a problem there in that he's playing in Henderson's position.
Yeah, so for
him. And that to me, sort of having someone who helps him set the tempo, who sets the tempo for him, I think can make a massive difference. And that wasn't happening around him. And I just thought he ends up just not being able to, as I say, just not being able to embed himself in the game.
Yeah, without a genie or a Henson, there was no balance for him. It was like he was trying to address that all by himself, and he just wasn't the man for that role in that game. Definitely not, especially not without, you know, a kind of more tricky player like Firmino in front of him. There was just nothing going on in that. In where he was trying to go with that.
It was a strange sort of lack of patience to me, Gareth. You know, Oxlade-Chamberlain and Keita, we can sort of talk about them as a two, I thought. And because whoever put the tweet together for the Anfield rap on two separate occasions specified me talking about Naby Keita, I got the Naby Keita anti-fandom Twitter because I deigned to be positive about him. I thought Keita at least looked like he knew where he was in the game. And I thought for the first half an hour, he was Liverpool's best player. I think he then came on strong in the second 45 up until when he subbed, when I think he's just tired a bit. And he's obviously integral for the goal. I thought he was pretty good across the course of the game. But I thought he too could have done with either Wijnaldum or Henderson playing. And it's sort of not fair on both of these lads in that they keep, you know, they keep getting thrown in together in a sense. And it almost feels like it's almost like a little bit of a test for them both as to who's gonna do better. And I'm sure it isn't that from the manager, but there's a certain consistency of them just not being able to set the pace of a game effectively.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what I meant before about the sort of changes too many, if you like, because, you know, the understandings that you get through a team that always plays together, when it's the strongest 11, they all know each other's games inside out. And we know that more often than not, Klopp goes with his biggest 11, his best 11 for the biggest games. And I kind of think if you're changing two, three and more, then it's disrupting loads of the rhythm, and it's harder for someone to come in and then shine, because, you know, it's not like the unthinking passes that you play, knowing someone's there and things like that. You're having to take that split second to maybe look to see where people are. And I get that they train together, but nevertheless, being in an 11, winning matches together makes a huge difference. So I was worried about that setup. But on Naby, like, I thought he did all right. I didn't think he was like pulling up trees, but I didn't think anyone was really. And I think I've seen a stat around half time, which was saying that, you know, aside from Fabinho, everyone's passing had been way off, and that's borne out in the stats and includes Naby. I mean, what I did like about him and what I always like about him, to be honest, is that he is positive, he is forward thinking. I think he does try and drive us forward, and it was nice, of course, for him to set up a goal. Whether he's done enough in that cameo to be warranting a start somewhere else, I mean, the manager spoke quite well about him, but then almost tempered what he was saying about him in the same interview, if you like. Which is kind of how I feel about him, in that you're sort of like, oh yeah, he was good and he did that. And then you kind of like, but he didn't fully take the game by the scruff of the neck or anything like that. He wasn't like, he still wasn't YouTube Naby. Do you know what I mean? So he did all right. He did all right. He did better than Oxlade-Chamberlain. I'd like to see him again getting a start in this run of games before the end of the season. But yeah, I still don't think we're really seeing a fella where you're like, he's a nailed-on starter, he's getting ahead of any of those boys that we know are the starters.
To me, Adam, I thought that, you know, as I say, both Oxlade-Chamberlain and Naby Keita could both have done with Henderson being present. To me, there's a minor problem possibly might have developed for this side. And let's be clear about this. We're talking about the champions of England. We're talking about a side that's only lost two league games all season. We're talking about a tremendous football team. But it suddenly occurred to me that the Henderson's become very, very important. And there'll be people who will say he always was, and there'll be other people who are very angry whenever you say that Henderson's become very, very important. But it seems to me now as though he is so central to how Liverpool set the tempo. And that wasn't the case, possibly, in game terms, sort of 18 months ago. I don't think that was quite the case. I think it may well have been a bit more the case than we thought. And when Liverpool was stuttering, it might have been because Henderson wasn't playing so well. But right now, he appears to be the Liverpool player who very much does dictate the tempo. And that's even more of a problem if, for instance, Firmino isn't on the pitch as well. But that's what I thought we were watching yesterday, is that you just get to see a massive difference at the speed that Liverpool play at, the decisions they make before and after Henderson's on the pitch.
Yeah, I agree with all of that. And you know, anybody who's listened to the Anfield Wrap for a long time will know that I've always been a big Henderson lover. I think he's a brilliant footballer. I think what he adds to this team goes unnoticed a lot of the time. But the one thing I would say, and I agree with everything you've said, but the one thing I would say is that it's understandable, I think, having won the league, that for some players there's a little bit of a drop-off in intensity and desire and all that sort of thing. And what Henderson brought almost more than anything else was a professionalism. Like, he came on to kind of say, just because the league's won, we now want to get the biggest points total ever. We wanted it, and he had that drive that maybe was lacking a little bit in his half, in that everybody was kind of, it was played almost at a testimonial pace, I think somebody said on the Pink last night. And that's kind of what it felt like, was it was quite lumbering. But Henderson came on and injected that pace. And I think it's very difficult I think Oxlade-Chamberlain is the sort of player where I said about Origi that he could play 15 games in a row, but he's not going to give you what Firmino gives you, because that's not his. I think Oxlade-Chamberlain is the kind of player where the more that he plays, the more into the rhythm of what we're doing he'll get, and the more he'll pick up those cues, if you like. And so I'm reluctant to judge him on sort of that one game last night, but it wasn't great. He wasn't great. And the Keita thing, my big problem with Keita has always been that the people who love him blow the smallest thing he does up to be like, oh my God, look at him, he's a world beater, unbelievable, that's incredible what he's just done. And you're like, well, it's not, is it? It's just basic stuff, really. Like, you don't need to get that carried away. And that makes people who haven't been sort of blown away kind of go the other way and suggest, you know, that it's really not good enough and all that. And I think last night he was fine. It wasn't man of the match performance or anything like that. It was good. He kept things ticking over, driving forward, positive influence, and obviously the pass he picks out for the goal is the key that unlocks everything. Great. It doesn't mean that, you know, we should be saying, oh my God, give him a pay rise and a new contract. It was just fine. And that's where I think I'd like to see the team that we kind of almost ended up with, you know, before the Curtis Jones sub, but I'd like to see the Fabinho, Henderson, Keita. I'd like to see that maybe a little bit more, because Henderson's got the drive to keep, you know, let Fabinho not have to worry about everything that's going on. And then Keita can have a little bit more freedom in the final third or the last two thirds of the pitch, if you like. That's a team I'd like to see given a little bit more of a chance. And that's not to underplay or undermine what it is that Wijnaldum offers, because I think he's really integral to what we have as well. They're both metronomic players, I would say, that keep things ticking. Henderson and Wijnaldum, that's what they bring to the team, and that's really underrated, I think.
Siobhan, the quality of the goals in every sense, in terms of the build-up play for the first and the second, and then the quality of the chance. You know, the only two good chances either side has all game, and the finishes for both are unerring. I think it did speak of that old thing that you can play a lot of football matches, but all that it needs is for two or three very good players to do very good things, and that's how you score a goal, and you're sort of waiting for those moments. And I think both of those goals have real signs of that these are very good players who do very good things, and there's nothing Aston Villa can do.
Well, that's the difference, isn't it? Like, I think no one would think that yesterday's performance was this big bounce-back performance that anyone would have wanted after last week. But what it was the everlasting, ever-growing proof that Liverpool find more than one way to skin a cat, and it's by good people doing really good things that, you know, it's that, not, don't panic. That's what it feels like to me. Someone will box it. And as you said before, the second the subs were made and the team, if you like, that everyone knows to be the team was on the pitch, it felt like it was coming straight away. I know you've both referenced the pass for the first goal from Naby Keita, and I thought the second goal was a really good, I thought it was a really good kind of indication of how Curtis Jones gets himself in really good positions, and no one is quite onto him being in those just yet.
Yeah.
But I have a slight fear that if any young lad is ever good for Liverpool, it means Liverpool think they don't have to sign anyone. And I'm a bit nervous that's coming in the next couple of weeks, because I don't want it to coincide with a potential signing for that to disappear. But I was absolutely made up for Curtis Jones. And what I was most made up about, did you see the grip Henderson got of him afterwards?
Yes.
Like, he probably broke a couple of ribs. He got him that hard. I just think that means an awful lot, because there's something been going on between them two. You can tell there's been a conversation between them two where he's going, I told you.
I thought it was in both the goals, Gareth, that there is a ton of quality in the build-up and then in the execution. And we're all obviously delighted for Curtis Jones that he's got his first Premier League goal. And it does sort of, as Siobhan says, both the position he takes up and also the manner of the finish, it does feel like the first of many. But Mane's finish for the first is absolutely unerring, and you want to see clinical finishing. That was a real pick-that-out moment. He absolutely wallops it.
Yeah, it was a beauty. And good to see after he forgot where his feet were on Thursday. So, that was nice. I mean, I quite enjoyed Mane in that. He had one of them games where I just thought he was toiling away and making sure he was in the right places all the way through. And then, you know, eventually it's him that tells and scores the goal. And on Curtis, yeah, I mean, we were talking about this on the post-match pint saying, look, it is always a little bit more special if you're from the city or around the city to see someone local doing well. And I think, you know, for the area that he comes from, you know, the city centre of essentially where he's been brought up, you know, it's nice to see a lad with that link for Liverpool to Liverpool playing for Liverpool. And I really enjoyed his interview as well afterwards.
Wasn't
he's quality. Like, I love the arrogance, stroke cockiness about the lad. I love that he's thrown in on a national football interview. You know that. It's mad how many people have never heard a toxic stroke City Centre Edge's accent before. They're like, what's this? It's like, that's how people speak around there, lad. What you're on about? I like, you know, they're a different Liverpool accent in Liverpool. It's very much a north end of the city accent. Some people say Buch and some people say Buch and all that. And, you know, he's got the right accent for his part of the city. I don't know why people are pulling him on it. But yeah, he's, as they keep saying, what I liked as well, again, I mentioned this on post-match pints, so apologies for people who watch both, but I really enjoyed the way, you know, obviously right now we're having to watch football in the way that Sky or BT or whatever decides to show it to us. We can't look where we want to look, if you know what I mean. And it went straight to like Klopp and Linders when Curtis Jones had scored. And I thought it almost looked like they were saying to each other, like they were made up, and they obviously made up that Liverpool had scored. But they were, it seemed like they were a bit like, oh, fucking hell, we're never going to hear the last of this.
No, I think in that, Adam, you know, the quality there for the goals is massive. The little cushion header from Salah's terrific as well. The Keita pass has been mentioned. It seems as though, and as I say, both finishes are just absolutely unerring. They're the only two good, they're only two passable chances in the game. Both of them hit the back of the net. That is clinical finishing from Liverpool. But it seems as though they were the moments where you just sort of got to see everyone relax, everyone show the class, the movement, which has been highlighted by Michael Owen. Everyone will have seen the video by the time this goes out. Of Firmino makes a difference. And it was the point at which the machine worked, and then people were able to show the quality rather than trying to show the quality despite the fact that the machine's not quite working.
And I think that the almost the key thing with that, I think, is that the team that was on the pitch to begin with is one that it was still finding its feet almost and trying to figure out where everyone was going to go and what moves people were going to make. And it to Aston Villa as well. Like, they were doing what they needed to do, taking up a very good shape, shutting down passing lanes, all that sort of thing. And, you know, you can't forget that. But I think once the as Siobhan said, the team was on the pitch, it then became everyone going, right, we know what everyone's going to do now. We know pretty much what everyone's
It was notable do. For me, Adam, the fullbacks got better.
Yeah.
And that's a strange thing. Neither fullback was subbed until later on when Nico Williams comes on, but neither fullback subbed, but both fullbacks, especially Robertson, but both fullbacks got better after Henderson and Wijnaldum were introduced.
Yeah, because they just know what they're going to do. They know where the space is going to be. They know what those players are going to do and how they both support them. And that's what I meant before when I was talking about Oxlade-Chamberlain, of if he got the games, you know, and the players suddenly know where he's going to be and what he's going to do. So everybody knew what was going to happen. Everyone knew what the team was going to do. And as soon as it had been playing for 5 minutes or so, everyone was back into the sort of typical rhythm of muscle memory. This is where people are going to go. This is what people are going to do. And then, you know, you then kind of have that next stage of, in the final third, things were a lot smoother and a lot better. And it was a much more kind of, you know, this is what we should have done against City kind of performance. And everybody was kind of doing what their job was. And it was great to see Curtis Jones kind of taking that chance, kind of starting the move and then taking it to the box. And I'm just going to see where things fall here, where the chips fall. And then he put it in the back of the net brilliantly, which is great to see. And yeah, up for him. I completely agree with Siobhan. I think it's something we're going to come on to talk about shortly with Thiago. The idea of, yeah, okay, but that doesn't mean we shouldn't buy anyone. Like, because he is still dead young. You know, it's saying a couple of, maybe two summers ago now, when there was talk of buying a defender and people were saying, oh yeah, but it'll block the path for Hoover. And I was like, we could bring somebody in who could play for the club for 5 years or 10 years and he'd still only be 26. It's not like, you know, and Curtis is young enough to me bring in another midfielder. That's not the end of his Liverpool career. So anyway, we're going to come to talk about that. But yeah, so it was great for him to score, great for him to get that confidence. Not that he needs a particular confidence boost, to be fair, but good that he got it anyway.
Looking at then the links that have come in after Liverpool beat Aston Villa 2-0, the links that came in around the Thiago Alcantara signing, Siobhan, when this sort of emerged on Thursday, I thought this is one of those ones with a 36-hour half-life where by the time we wake up on Saturday morning, it's all done and dusted and somebody's gone. There is no way this is happening. And it's somebody everybody believes and we go from there. Paul Joyce, Mel Reddy, James Pearce. That's what's not happened with this. And it's strange how, firstly, the nature of how it's sort of emerged, but then secondly, how it's retained its legs. Thiago to Liverpool does look as though, not as though it's a sure thing, not as though it's nailed on, but it does look as though it's plausible and possible.
Yeah, we haven't had the not happening, mate, from James Pearce, have we? So you do wonder. And also, I'd noted that the Klopp's interview wasn't exactly a shutdown on it either.
Far from it.
It was like a bit of a wry smile. Don't you ask about me, because I might just say no. You know, that kind of like almost cheeky approach to it. Yeah, I was fully expecting it to go away as well. More so because, well, there seems to be a bit of a queue for that role as well, in my opinion. But, well, just from what I can see, you know, on the face of it. But whether there's something in it with maybe Wijnaldum not extending his contract, or maybe people not thinking that Naby's got a long-term future there, I don't know. But, yeah, it's not going away. And it came out so out of nowhere that I thought it would just disappear out of nowhere, that it was just someone in like some Spanish magazine somewhere that tells no truth.
Silly sports.
Yeah.
That's all of a sudden.
Just someone with a blue tick who doesn't deserve a blue tick saying it. But yeah, I had a little look this morning. Yeah, still not going away.
Gareth, I mean, you know, firstly, do you think that there is something in that I do at this point? As I say, normally this is the sort of thing that does last 36 hours max, at times even 12 hours, and then is knocked back if there's nothing there. And secondly, if there is something in it, what do you think the thinking is, given the age, cost, etc.?
I'm just really enjoying some of the really mad things that people are doing around it, like, you know, like basically how daft some people get about transfers. I mean, you know, people are like, I've just seen on Twitter right now, like his agents followed Peter Moore, How do you know? Why are you going through someone's followers on Twitter? And
he realised it was his agent, but it was his marketing manager of the agency. They were like, still, though, still, it's still a massive link.
But there's like real clamours around that. There's like, you know, like Joyce's followed Tiago there, you know. Hey, James Pierce has as well. Sam must be signing then. And like, you know,
the reason is that Joyce and James Pierce are probably thinking, fucking hell, something happens with this fellow, we best be on it. It's not as though they've had a nod. It's more the going, well, we could do with being on top of this now.
And you know, and I know Craig yesterday was desperate to try and find something out and was like sort of, you know, lashing texts out to various people and ever, you know, the most you were getting back was a sort of don't think so for sure. But no one, as you say, no one's absolutely said no. You know, there hasn't been an outright no, which suggests that there is something there. Obviously, Bayern have said he can go and all that kind of stuff. In terms of the thinking, I don't know. It's an intriguing one, isn't it? Because you kind of think we're all right in his position. So then when I was thinking about it, I thought, well, you know, Klopp's not averse to the sort of the left field, is he? Let's be honest. You know, when that time, like we've seen, albeit, you know, emergency measures, but you've seen Fabinho, for instance, drop to centre-half. You've seen Wijnaldum play there. You obviously had Milner play a season at left back, much to his annoyance. So I don't know. I mean, I've been trying to get my head around it, and I'm thinking, has he got something mad in mind? Like, everyone thinks I'm going to buy more fullbacks, but you know what? Henderson could play right back if I needed them or something like that. I don't know. I don't know why he wants to stop. I mean, I don't think it's the Wijnaldum thing. I don't know why. I just don't get the sense that he is getting off on it. And again, on the daft stuff, I've seen something on Twitter, I don't know whether you've seen it, about Wijnaldum, and it was like, he's just had this new floor put in his gaff. Why would he be getting off? I love stuff like that.
You know, I love that as well. I reckon there's like a secret social network of Liverpool-based tradesmen who do transfers for Liverpool and Everton rumours. Do you know what I mean? Well, I mean, you're saying that about Andre Gomez, but he's just got a new shower head.
And that,
I mean, I've just put two and two together.
They've got to see that grand out of because.
Yeah, exactly. No, I love that. They're my favourites. My absolute favourite is when someone's had X done to the house or put the house on the market. At which point, well, I mean, you know, you don't have to be a genius to add it up from here.
It's like following vans is last year.
Yeah.
Following vans and tracking flights is gone.
Yeah.
It's all about, have they had a new floor put in? Have they got a new
So swimming pool? You don't want me to text you the tail number that I've got for his private jet now, you know?
What do you think the thinking is, Adam? Let's take it on its merits for a split second and say that Liverpool are very, very interested. Is it as simple as he's a terrific player who's available at a certain price and Liverpool would like some of that? Because there's nothing wrong with that if that's the logic. There's nothing wrong with a transfer policy which is let's buy really good players. Now, don't get me wrong, Liverpool haven't got here just with a simple one-line transfer policy like that. We know that. But I do wonder whether or not, for me, one of the things that it sort of hits me is that Liverpool may feel this is about as close as you get to a sure thing. And that if you want to freshen a squad up, buying a sure thing is not necessarily a bad thing.
I think it's an odd one because the things that go against the idea of us signing him are the injury history, the injury record of him, and his age. They're the two big things that flash up and say they are very much on the FSG don't sanction those sort of signings thing. However, right now, the market is mad. And I think they must be looking at it and going, we have no idea what's going to happen when things start to move. We've not got a clue. And a talented, versatile 29-year-old who fits into what Klopp will want to use him for, who is, you know, undeniably a good player and is available for what is a relatively bargain fee, even regardless of what happens to the market because of the pandemic and all that. 30 million is nothing for a player of his quality and having achieved what he's achieved. And the rumours that he's on, 70,000 a week at Bayern. So even if you have to give him a bit of an improvement on that, you're still not having to pay him massive wage hike that was what they were looking at with Timo Werner, wasn't it? It was the whole package, the agent fees, the wage per week, and the transfer fee just meant that it was really not viable. I think this is viable, and I think they're also probably looking at it and going, well, yeah, okay, he's not got a brilliant injury record, and that's a slight problem. But that being said, we've also got players who can play where he wouldn't be the only player in that position that we'd have in the squad. So if he is injured, it's not the end of the world if we lose him for a month. So we've got other players who can play there, so it doesn't matter.
I think that, just to come back on that, I think that's where I think it's a little bit of a double-edged sword. And I mean, this is a positive in this instance from the point of view of there being a lot of midfielders, Adam. I think that everyone sort of looked and gone, well, he'll come in, and Siobhan said before, well, where's the queue? And where does he come in at the queue? And the queue is a really valid point, but the flip side of the queue is that Liverpool, you know, have got, they've got a lot of players in there, and therefore then if he does need to have his time on the pitch managed a little bit, well, that's absolutely fine. And there might be a couple of others you can say that for. And I think in general, if you look at this Liverpool team, we've just talked about it being a bit disjointed, yes. But if there's been an area over across the last 2-3 seasons where people have been in and out, whether through injury or through selection, it is centre midfield.
Yeah, exactly that. Exactly that. And I don't see the downside to signing him, really, for that exact reason. Because, all right, you know, he's not going to have much sell-on value, things like that. But that's just not stuff that I think really matters when it's only 30 million. And obviously that's a daft thing to say in a world where money's really important. But in footballing terms, that's just not a big fee anymore. So to bring him in for such a relatively low amount of money in a position where we're quite nicely overstocked, so it doesn't matter if he gets injured per se, and all of that, it does actually make a whole heap of sense for me. And I think I was very skeptical about us signing him until nobody said we're not. And the Klopp one is the one for me, because the amount of times we've all heard him say, no, no, nothing happening there, no, that's a nonsense. And he didn't say that. And it's you wonder whether there's a conversation maybe going on between, you know, Michael Jürgen Klopp and FSG, where they're saying, you know, FSG is saying, well, there's no sell-on value, he's old, he's injury prone. And they're saying, yeah, but listen, he's a fantastic player, and what he can offer the side would be really quite exciting. It would jazz things up a little bit going into next season, which is exactly what we need to freshen things up.
Last little thing on it, although I think that the idea of maybe conversations being ongoing internally is interesting there from Adam Gareth, is Klopp's talked about him a lot. That's one of the things that's hit me. Maybe I'm naive, but I actually struggle to think of a player that the manager's, an opposition player, not one of ours, but an opposition player the manager's talked about an awful lot. And all of a sudden there's 3 or 4 things he said around Thiago. I remember being at an event where he talked about Thiago in the context of signing Naby Keita. And one of the things that he said was, yeah, last season Naby was the second best midfielder in Germany behind Thiago, who's such a good player. And it does seem to me as though, you know, the manager does actually have a bit more on the record about this footballer than I would have expected.
Yeah, and it just adds to the intrigue, doesn't it? And I think as well, just going back to what I was saying before about, you know, I think we can deal as fans in very sort of binary things about football players. So like we're very much like, you know, we need to sign another left back. And we say left back, we don't say we just need another good footballer in the squad. We'll say left back. But, you know, like, for instance, like, you know, you're used to seeing Fabinho in his position that he's in now. We're used to seeing him in the middle of the park doing what he does there and doing it very well. But, you know, at Monaco, he's playing fullback. And so, you know, is it just the case of that the manager's saying, like, in such a scenario, like, could we shift everyone around? We've got Thiago there now for midfield. And, like, could Milner drop back and be a left-back again? Could Fabinho be a full-back in an emergency situation? Because he's had a real difficulty in getting the kind of full-back that he wants in, hasn't he? He's had a couple of goes at the sort of the talented youngster-type route, and it hasn't quite worked. We haven't quite got those targets. And people think it's that easy to just go and get the right person, the right transfer, but, you know, the players and their agents aren't daft as well, are they, in every respect? So
Trent Alexander-Arnold's good, isn't he? He is, mate, but, you know, you'll get games.
Exactly that. Because, you know, you've got to think about your own career. And, you know, we'll all say as fans, and, you know, we get emotional about it and say, well, you know, as if you turn it down, if Liverpool come calling, Well, yeah, to an extent. But if you think you're just going to go there and not play footy, like that's not great, is it? Like training all weekend and being nowhere near the first team, nowhere near an opportunity, and you're just waiting essentially to get injured is a bit grim. Like if you can't see your pathway, then you're not going to come. And maybe that's one of Liverpool's difficulties. So the idea of just getting a top class player in who's good, who's available, who the manager likes. Probably he likes the manager as well. You know, everyone now knows about Jurgen Klopp, what he does, how he coaches you, the football he plays and everything else. You know, it could be that it happens and it could be that it makes a lot of sense. I mean, it'd be exciting, wouldn't it? I mean, you know, it might not be everyone's first choice position to sort out, and that's what I mean about being binary. But it's still exciting to be linked with a player like that and the idea that he's going to come to Anfield and play a part and be on the pitch for us and right behind them.
All right then, moving on to Brighton, Siobhan. They've done well since we've come back. You can't argue with it, you can't argue with the way the table looks. I mean, that was, I think, built into the football anyway prior to this break. They did look at those who were down there in the bottom six. Like on paper, they played the best stuff. You can still even now look at the goal difference and see theirs is in single digits minus. Everyone beneath them is at least twice as badly off, and even the sides above them have got poorer goal difference. And Brighton, I think that's a really, it's quite a basic measure, but I think it is one that is quite significant. What I'm saying, Siobhan, is they're a good side. It's not going to be easy on Wednesday night at all.
I was having a little read about them before this morning, and their points per game since the restart, if that was across the whole season, obviously that's unlikely, would have got them sixth last season.
Yeah.
Now, obviously that's a really small test environment that you're going on, but it just means that it, by the looks, they've been really organised, they've been really kind of solid since they came back. I think the game against United was probably a bit of a mix-up compared to the other ones, but from what I saw the highlights against Norwich, they're not afraid to get on you on the counter, they're not afraid to kind of stand up to you at the back. They've got a lot of really little fellas, you can do lots of really little good things, but yeah, it's not going to be a pushover, and for the sake of all our sanity, can we just maybe get a better foothold in the game, maybe in the first half?
I'll come back to you straight away on it, Siobhan, and then we'll think about the Liverpool side in a minute. But what you say there about the foothold in the game, I think is the key thing. I think that, you know, I saw the game with them against United, and United basically just get two goals, yeah. And it does not have help matters. And I think that the problem with this Brighton side that Liverpool are going to find is they stay in games, and whilst they're in games, they are dangerous. Moore pays a good player, Moyes a good player, Trossard's a good player, Proper's a good player, Basuma's a good player. You go right the way through the sides and you're looking at them, and I thought against Norwich, they beat Norwich 1-0, but if they needed to beat Norwich 3-0, I think they'd have beaten Norwich 3-0.
Definitely, yeah. Got nothing to add to that.
No, I'll move across to Adam then. I think that there are sides, Adam, who I think a one to watch going into next season, in that I'm not expecting them to be ever really spoken about in a relegation context next season. They're constantly looking to grow and learn.
Yeah, and I like the manager. I think he's done a good job, and he's of, I mean, you can tell because they are, as you say, basically safe. You know, they're obviously not mathematically so, but you'd be amazed if they got dragged into any kind of conversation. And I think they're a team that strike me a decent mid-table side. That's what they look like to me. That next season, you wouldn't be surprised if they finish sort of anywhere between 9th and 12th, and we're just sort of comfortable all the way through. They'll ask questions, and I think we'll have to be at our best if we want to get 3 points out of it. I don't think, you know, we can't turn up kind of half-arsed as we did yesterday, really, in the first half, where things aren't clicking. So I would be very surprised if Henderson didn't start for that exact reason, to make sure that we've got that that metronomic thing that I talked about before, keeping things running and keeping things going. I think it'll be a tougher watch than people want it to be, actually. But if United can stick two past them, we can, you know, because I know United's front four, if you like, is in good form at the moment, but ours is better. So I think if we've got the rhythm going, I think we'll score them, and then it's just a matter of keeping them out, which hopefully will be easier than it feels like it will be going in, if you see what I mean. I just think it, but I'd be surprised if the manager made loads of changes.
At Anfield, when they came to Anfield, Gareth, we race into a 2-0 lead. We create a couple of good opportunities. From there, I actually think they managed the game reasonably well, Brighton. And yes, there is the sending off. But even before then, I think that they keep the head, they keep playing. I actually think they could be the better side for the first 20 minutes of the second half at Anfield. Now, that could be in part because we're doing to them what they just did to Norwich, which is get ahead and just keep them at arm's length. And I think there was an element of that from that second half from Liverpool. It was very much, we're 2-0 up, lads. You're not getting near our goal. Have at it. Enjoy yourselves. But they still did actually conduct themselves pretty well. And I think they play well across the course of that game, Brighton. I think they're impressive when they come to Anfield. And I think it's why whenever I've been speaking to Liverpool supporters who've been looking at the table, who don't really necessarily watch all that much other football over the course of the season, everyone's been a bit like, Brighton away? And that's sort of, Norwich are better than this, aren't they? Because they played well at Anfield. But they did do well against us, it's fair to say.
Yeah, they did. They're a neat and tidy side. They're a decent side. It's at home really where they've done better. If you look at the sort of home and away tables, they've only lost 5 at home. I think where you're seeing a problem for them, particularly when they're coming up against Liverpool, is they've only scored 19 at home.
Yeah.
And Liverpool have only conceded 12, I think it is, away.
Yeah.
When you think 4 of them were at City, then that's being built on. And I still think I wouldn't be reading too much into City still. I mean, that's the first time since 2017 that we've been conceding 4 goals in the league. I think you saw we defended a lot better again against Villa, although they did have some chances. But I mean, you saw the quality of Alisson, which you've not mentioned in this show, but he makes a fantastic save from Grealish. I thought Gomez as well looked a lot better than he was.
It's a fair point, Robert, that we haven't mentioned the man of the match.
Yeah. But what I'm saying is, I think you can talk Brighton up, but equally, you've got to look at what will be formidable for them, and it'll be very difficult, I imagine, for them to score. And I think as well, I wrote something on our Facebook page about the game yesterday, saying for me that Villa game yesterday was one of the ones where it really grabbed me, really hit home, not being there because it was obviously our first game as champions at Anfield after the 30-year wait and all that. And so I got a bit I was a bit down about it that I wasn't there with my mates. And I also...
All weekend, Robbo. I know, I think I'm really pleased you mentioned that. I was all weekend. I found the weekend hard, to be honest with you, because of this, because you were sort of all right with City away. We might not have got tickets and it's a bit weird anyway. And it would have been a bit strange. And obviously we win it when we're not playing, so that's all fine. Yesterday it did hit me hard. We haven't got to all sit together, stand together and sing about the champions. And yeah, it was difficult, I think. It was tough.
It was one of them as well. I thought, at times during the game as well, Liverpool's performance was low intensity. What didn't have that pace to it that, you've come to get used to. And I think if we'd been in there, hailing them as champions, cheering them onto the pitch, but also just lifting them. There's moments like that where essentially 55,000 people go, come on! and you sort of feel like they at times go, oh, are you? And and so just speed it up a bit and remember what they're doing and why they're there and that they've got to get a result for all these fans. And when you take that away, I'm not having that, it doesn't have an effect. And this is a roundabout way of saying that I think for Brighton, Liverpool coming to town would have been one of them as well for them. I think you've seen when we've gone down there before that the ground's really up for it. The fans are really up for it. They love the idea of bloody in the nose of the champions, if you like. And there'll still be an element of that, obviously, with the players. They'll want to do that. But I think it just spurs you on. It just adds to the adrenaline when you've got all your fans behind you. So actually, that may play into Liverpool's hands a bit, that Brighton don't have that. So I think it'd be very difficult for them. It won't be easy. I agree, really. I think it was Adam just said there a second ago that it probably won't be the prettiest of games, but I would still expect Liverpool to prevail.
Pick me a team, Siobhan.
Oh, Jim, come to me first.
I am.
On yesterday's evidence, I would bring Henderson back and I would bring Firmino back or take a chance on Minamino. Aside from that, okay.
You're going to go with the same back four, first choice back four, go with Fabinho, Henderson, Keita, Minamino, in with
No, I'm not going Minamino. No.
Okay. Get off me back.
Putting words in my mouth here. I'm having a little think. I don't know whether does Robertson needs a bit of a break. Is he a bit goosed? Is he blowing? He was blowing a bit yesterday, weren't he? And he's. I think he's. I haven't really seen much of it, but he said this morning that his fitness isn't great. But then if Milner's not back, then there's no. Yeah, Robertson's in. I'm going with the back four. I'm going with Henderson, Fabinho, Keita. And I'm going with the front three, but I wouldn't be surprised if there was a small Mickey in there somewhere.
Well, you sound marvellous. Okay, set. Brilliant work. Well done, everybody. Adam, are you going to go with what Siobhan's put on the table there, or are you going to go a little different?
I threw it on the table.
I'd be shocked if there was a Nico Williams thing in there, because I think he's proven when he's come on that he looks decent, and I wonder whether maybe the manager will think about getting to a bit of a rest. But I think he'll want to do it. If he makes changes, I think they'll be small. I don't think they'll be as wholesale as they were against Villa. So I think for me, I could imagine it being the team, to use Siobhan's trademarked thing now, the team, but maybe with Nico Williams in for Trent. I think the only question comes down to whether there's a thing with Robertson of is he going to be better if we keep playing him, or is he going to if he gets a rest? I think that's the only one that for me that's there. So I wouldn't be surprised to see the team, but with Nico Williams in for Trent.
Okay, Gareth.
Yeah, I think Nico's knocking on the door and was going to say similar, although I think he might wait for Burnley to play Nico.
So do I.
Just because it's Arsenal away after that, and then it's Chelsea at home after that, and they're two difficult games. I know we all love, not least me, to sort of be really like, oh, fuck Arsenal, the shit. But they're all right at home, and they're always all right at home. So I kind of think that might be a tougher game than many will anticipate. So I think you're seeing the team, as we're now all calling it, at Arsenal. But I think Burnley's the opportunity for Nico to come in, and maybe one or two others there as well, because I think Burnley have been really fortunate, you know. Like, they just keep nicking, like, they're playing shite, and the amount of times...
It's unbelievable yesterday, wasn't it?
Yeah, the amount of times I'm hearing, like, commentate, like, you know, I'm not necessarily even watching the game, I'll have it on the radio or whatever, and they're going, and I'll just go over to the Burnley game, yeah, and completely against the run of the play, and it's like, what, again? You know what I mean? And so that seems to keep happening to them. There seems an acceptance from them, everyone at the club, that they're all right for now, and that'll do. And Dyche is sort of like, oh, cheers, lads. So it kind of feels like there's maybe a thrashing in the post for them there, and that'd feel like a nice one. I think it'd be nice for Nico to start at Anfield as well, and you know, have that romance as well and things like that. So yeah, Brighton's probably tougher, and you've had a decent break between Sunday to Wednesday. So I don't expect too many mad changes. I expect them probably to be reverting to, you know, the team once the subs are on the pitch, basically, the other day.
Okay. I wonder if there could be a mad left-back selection in there in order to get Robertson a little bit of rest. I'm not quite sure who that would be, because it seems like Milner's still got a couple of injuries as well. But it wouldn't surprise me if someone who you might not expect, and it could be Nico Williams, it could be Alexander-Arnold, my runner and rider for this is Gini Wijnaldum. But it wouldn't surprise me if somebody ends up playing left-back and they themselves are as much as we are going, for God's sake, manager, come on, give us a break. But that wouldn't surprise me. And apart from that, I think that it will, broadly speaking, be the team. Listen, thank you very much indeed to Gareth, to Siobhan and to Adam. It has been an excellent Anfield Wrap this week after a slightly disjointed Liverpool performance, but the Reds go marching on in pursuit of points records, in pursuit of being the first team in Premier League history to go 19 out of 19. And if that happens, me and Gareth Roberts will sit down together, because he first grabbed me on this 2 years ago and went, lads, we just need to win every home game. Well, one way or another, Liverpool are doing that. See you later. Sports Social Podcast Network.